Hello, world. How goes it? This is Zach, and you're listening to Reads on the Bitcoin Well podcast. Slightly different flavor today. Normally on Reads, I bring you an essay, the kind of thing that reads just as well 6 months from now as it does today. But today's piece comes out of our market update blog, which means it's stamped with a date, a price, and a mood, and all three tend to have a shelf life. Case in point, we wrote that Bitcoin was sitting near $68,000, down about 45% from the top, with sentiment buried in extreme fear. Van Eck was out this week saying we're flashing 8 of 12 capitulation signals and the bottom still isn't in. Fine. Then I sat down to record this and Bitcoin's up 6% on the day, kissed 69.7, and roughly $1.4 billion of short positions got vaporized on the way up. Why? Because the Treasury doubled the size of its long-dated bond buybacks. At least that's the catalyst. Uncle Sam went shopping for his own IOUs because the 30-year yield just touched a 19-year high, and the national debt is about to click past $40 trillion, months ahead of the CBO's own schedule. Gold noticed too, up 3% today, up 35% on the year. Oh, and Chinese robot maker IPO'd and ran 600%, because of course it did. So let's step out of the chaos of the news cycle and relax into some knowledge and understanding. Today's reads, why diminishing returns became the most crowded belief in Bitcoin, how gold just ran a $15 trillion proof of concept, and why unit bias solved at $36 a share still doesn't beat holding your own keys. Thoughts, pushback, arithmetic corrections, z.adair at bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair at bitcoinwell.com. I read and answer every single one. And remember, A is A. Enjoy the show. The bull market nobody is positioned for. Everyone agrees the big returns are gone. Everyone agreed gold couldn't double too. On October 7, 2025, Bitcoin hit $126,000 and nobody threw a party. Okay, well, maybe some people did. But think about how strange that is. An all-time high, the highest price in the asset's history. And the dominant emotion across the industry was disappointment. Standard Chartered carried a $200,000 target into the year. Bitwise also said $200,000. Tom Lee said $250,000. And we got $126,000 for about a week. Then 10 months of grinding lower and lower. As I write this, Bitcoin trades near $68,000, down 45% from the top. And 2025 went into the books as the first post-halving year in history to close red. Of course, side note, it did enter all-time high territory before the halving, which also hadn't happened before. But here's the part nobody says out loud. This bear is brutal, but not because of the drawdown. I mean, we've survived worse. The 2015 bear took 85%, 2018 took 84%, and I was there for that one. 2022 took 77%. And by Bitcoin standards, 49% is almost polite. So what makes this one brutal is that it feels unearned. There was no euphoria to pay for. No Uber driver asked me about Bitcoin in 2025. No mania, no leverage orgy, no cousin texting for exchange recommendations at Christmas dinner. We got the hangover without the party. And that absence, strangely, is the first reason I think the next bull market will be the big one. The most crowded belief in Bitcoin. Do the arithmetic on Bitcoin cycle tops and you get a clean, seductive curve. The 2017 peak was about 17 times the 2013 peak. The 2021 peak was 3.5 times the 2017 peak. And the 2025 peak was 1.8 times the 2021 peak. If you're still following, extrapolate, and the next top lands somewhere around 170,000, a rounding error. Barely worth the volatility. This is the diminishing returns thesis, and it has quietly become the most crowded belief in Bitcoin. Grayscale published research showing each cycle's amplitude compressing by roughly 75%. Galaxy Research argued in June that the four-year cycle is probably still real, but shrinking with every turn. Michael Saylor declared the cycle's dead entirely, replaced by institutional flows. Even the optimists surrendered the premise. Bitwise CIO Matt Hugin titled a December memo, "The Four-Year Cycle is Dead," and predicted smoother, gentler appreciation from here. The bulls and the bears now agree on exactly one thing: the era of violent upside is over. When Wall Street desks, on-chain analysts, and podcasters all converge on the same model, that's not analysis anymore. That's a crowd. Hayek gave his Nobel lecture a title that applies here: the pretense of knowledge. We have four completed cycles, four data points. You can draw a curve through four points that proves anything you want, and everyone has chosen the comfortable one. The one where Bitcoin matures into a well-behaved asset that compounds politely and never embarrasses a risk committee again. Maybe. Or maybe a curve through four points is just a sketch, not a law of nature. Notice that even the confident calls keep missing. Hugin's cycle is dead memo predicted new all-time highs in 2026. We got a 49% drawdown instead. The cycle purists demanded a euphoric blow-off in 2025, but it never came. Nobody's framework survived contact with the real market, which tells you the one thing everyone remains certain about, that the big returns are gone forever, is exactly the kind of certainty that markets exist to break, especially Bitcoin. Markets pay consensus nothing. The asymmetry always lives on the other side of the crowd's beliefs. Gold ran the experiment. For years, the strongest argument against a monster Bitcoin rally was the law of large numbers. Bitcoin, as it goes, is a $1 trillion asset now. $1 trillion assets don't multiply. Look at gold, an $8 trillion rock that spent a decade going nowhere. Big, mature stores of value grind. They don't rip. And then gold ripped. In 2025, gold gained 64%, breaking 3,000 and 4,000 for the first time in history. By late January 2026, it printed roughly 5,600 an ounce, a record not just nominally, but in inflation-adjusted terms, taking out the 1980 benchmark that had stood for two generations. Total above-ground gold went from about $18 trillion in September 2024 to a peak above $33 trillion in January 2026. So gold added roughly $15 trillion of market value in 16 months. That's more than 10 entire Bitcoin markets at today's price, conjured by the repricing of a 5,000-year-old rock. Silver was even more violent. It spent 45 years below its 1980 high of $50, broke through in October of last year, and didn't stop until $121 on January 29th, up 147% in a year, with JP Morgan's metals desk describing physical markets so tight they distorted the entire volatility profile. Notice what the metals didn't need. No halving, no adoption curve, no new technology, no ETF approval moment, no demographic wave. And unlike Bitcoin, their supply answers to price. At $5,000, gold miners dig faster, scrap flows back, and vaults open. Gold doubled anyway because the marginal buyer wasn't shopping for jewelry. Central banks and institutions were repricing monetary risk itself, and they were willing to pay any price to do it. The ceiling argument is dead, and the metals killed it. If the oldest, most mature monetary asset on Earth can double in about a year, then Bitcoin going from a $1.3 trillion asset to a $20 trillion asset is not a fantasy. It's a smaller move than the one the metals complex just completed, in an asset whose supply can't respond, held by people who famously refuse to sell. One more thing. Clear Street's Owen Lau made the point in January that when traditional havens hit peak valuations, capital historically looks downstream for the next store of value. Gold at $33 trillion was the market voting on the monetary problem. It hasn't voted on the solution yet. 40 trillion reasons. What monetary problem? Well, this one. This week, the U.S. national debt is about to cross $40 trillion. The Congressional Budget Office had projected borrowing would top out at $39.4 trillion this fiscal year. Treasury blew through that with a quarter to spare. Interest on the debt now costs more than $1.2 trillion a year, more than national defense, more than almost anything else the government does. July alone posted a record $432 billion monthly deficit. Bank of America's Michael Hartnett expects $50 trillion by 2029 and has built his entire decade framework around three words: anything but bonds. And here's the trap, the one Austrians have described for a century. Kevin Warsh's Fed is staring at PCE inflation of 3.6%, nearly double target. And markets spent the summer debating rate hikes. But every additional point of yield on $40 trillion eventually costs roughly $400 billion a year in new interest alone, financed with more borrowing. Hike, and you detonate the Treasury's own math. Cut, and you feed the inflation that is already loose. The debt now dictates monetary policy, not the other way around. Economists call it fiscal dominance. Mises just called it the endgame of credit expansion. The boom ends either because you stop it voluntarily or because the currency does. Watch what Washington actually did, not what it said. It's crossing $40 trillion during an expansion, with markets near record highs, and the policy response was a record July deficit, plus plans to raise the debt ceiling again by early next year. There is no voluntary stop coming. There is only the currency. Gold's chart is the market front-running that choice. Bitcoin's chart hasn't started yet. Booth's clock. If the debt is the fuel, AI is the ignition. Jeff Booth published The Price of Tomorrow in 2020 with an argument that sounded theoretical at the time. The natural state of the free market is deflation. He told Crypto Slate last fall, technology relentlessly delivers more for less, while a debt-based system requires prices to rise forever. Two opposite systems wired into the same economy. Something has to give, and what gives is the money. Central banks must print ever harder just to keep technology's abundance from showing up as falling prices. Because on a debt this size, deflation is death. The debts stay nominal while income falls. That was the forecast, but AI put it on a schedule. Big tech is deploying about $725 billion into AI infrastructure in 2026 alone, part of an estimated $2.1 trillion through 2028, a capital intensity double the 1990s internet build-out. Every dollar of it is explicitly aimed at making cognition, labor, and production cheaper. It's the largest deflationary force ever engineered, arriving at the exact moment the debtor owes $40 trillion and runs a $2 trillion structural deficit. You already know how the system responds to that collision, because it only has one move. Every AI displaced job becomes a relief program. Every productivity gain becomes political cover for more spending. The printer is not a risk scenario anymore. It is a design requirement. And here's the Austrian punchline. When they print into technological deflation, prices look stable and everyone declares victory. What actually happened is that the abundance you were owed got confiscated at the ledger. There is exactly one unit of account that still shows it, measured in Bitcoin. Everything technology touches keeps getting cheaper. Measured in dollars, you run in place forever. The exit door from the AI trade. None of this is an argument that AI is fake. The technology is obviously real. The trade is another matter. The top 10 stocks now make up about 40% of the S&P 500, above the 27% concentration during the peak of the dot-com bubble. In late June, profitability fears erased $1.3 trillion of semiconductor market value in a single week and briefly tripped a circuit breaker in Seoul. Analysts keep pointing at the same gap, roughly $400 billion a year in infrastructure spending against about $100 billion in enterprise AI revenue. The market spent 2 years front-running a decade of AI earnings. The easy phase of that trade is behind us, and here's what people forget about crowded trades. When they tire, the gains don't evaporate. They rotate. Trillions of dollars of appreciation are sitting in the most concentrated positions in 50 years, held by people who got rich on asymmetry. They'll go looking for the next asymmetry. Make the shopping list for them. Liquid, volatile, hard-capped, a monetary story that just got a $15 trillion proof of concept from gold, trading at half price while everything else sits near record highs. The list has one item on it. Sentiment is a switch, not a dial. Meanwhile, look at the mood. Citigroup slashed its Bitcoin forecast in July. BlackRock's IBIT bled nearly $5 billion over 3 months this spring. Sentiment gauges sit in extreme fear. Analysts compete to call lower lows, and the loudest voices in the room are explaining why the cycle is broken for good this time. Quietly, the one-month ETF flows already flip positive again. Bitcoin does not do gradual. New supply is about 450 coins a day, no matter what the price does, and the holder base refuses to sell into weakness. When demand flips against a supply like that, price doesn't climb, it gaps. FOMO in this asset is a phase transition, not a dial someone turns. Everyone who is waiting for confirmation gets their confirmation in the same 2 weeks, at prices 40% higher, and becomes the demand shock they were waiting to see. I've watched this movie before, and the crowd never arrives early and it never arrives slowly. The unit bias fix. If you're reading this, odds are you're a Bitcoin Well customer, which means you already did this the right way. You bought real Bitcoin, often a few hundred dollars at a time, and sent it straight to a wallet that you control. That decision is about to matter more than it ever has. Every previous mania ran into the same invisible wall, and it wasn't technology. It was a feeling. Call it unit bias, the human need to own whole units of a thing. Rory Sutherland calls this psychologic, and it beats spreadsheet logic every time. Owning 0.008 of something feels like crumbs, no matter what the math says. And at $126,000 a coin, the sticker itself screams, too late, at exactly the people the next wave needs. The feeling is a lie, of course. Every Bitcoin divides into 100 million sats. The network has no idea what a whole coin is, and a $100 stack appreciates at exactly the same rate as a 100 coin vault. All that counts is your share of the 21 million. You know this. You beat unit bias years ago with knowledge and a stacking schedule. Better, you kept the part that matters, the keys. An ETF share is a claim. Bitcoin in your wallet is property. A claim can be frozen, gated, or surrendered with one letter to five custodians. The ETFs are the safe deposit boxes of our era, and a modern executive order 6102 is just a database query away. Your keys are not in the database. Normies will never do any of that, and now they don't have to. Wall Street solved unit bias for them. A share of IBIT costs about $36 today, less than dinner, sitting next to the index funds and the app your neighbor already has, RRSPs and 401ks included. The distance between I want in and I'm in is one tap. It is the most efficient FOMO delivery mechanism ever attached to this asset, and it requires nobody to learn anything. Now here's the beautiful part. Every one of those paper shares must be backed by real coins, bought in the open market and locked in a vault. When the crowd stampedes through the brokerage apps, the float shrinks at the exact moment demand goes vertical, and every coin on the network gets repriced, including yours. They solve unit bias with a ticker. You know self-custody is more important. A is A. So stack the board and look at it honestly. A consensus certain the big returns are gone, extrapolated from four data points. The oldest monetary assets on Earth doubling in a year, killing the only serious argument against trillion-scale repricing. A $40 trillion debt crossed with interest costs past defense and no voluntary stop anywhere in the math. The largest deflationary technology in history forcing the printer into permanent service, exactly as Booth wrote 6 years ago. The most crowded trade of the decade looking for an exit ramp. Distribution rails wired into every brokerage account with unit bias dissolved to $36 a share, and the hardest asset ever created sitting at half price, its supply schedule indifferent to all of it. I'm not giving you a date and I'm not giving you a target. Anyone who does is selling something. What I'm telling you is that Rand's oldest rule applies to markets too. A is A. 21 million coins against $40 trillion of debt is not a thesis. It's arithmetic. You can vote against arithmetic for a long time, but you can't repeal it. Bear markets are where the coins change owners. The crowd will come. It always does. The only question is what you paid before it arrived. Nobody threw a party at 126,000. I think the next all-time high won't be so quiet.